News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest-running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or *1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 11th of September, Anno Domini 2005, and you lucky people. You're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And we'll be talking about all things iPod.
Wait a minute. Can I say
something?
Talking
about how
really
the Windows folks are patchless this week. But first...
No, I wanted to say something really quick. You can usually tell if you're tired or wide awake when you do your whole good morning thing.
Yeah?
Like, for instance, this morning, you're like, good morning. You know, there's other times you're
what,
like, good
you know,
morning.
You know why?
Depends on how high the levels peak.
You know what? Yeah. Nobody's mentioned it yet today. You know why he's probably a little groggy? You know what yesterday was?
His birthday.
You got it.
Yes. Yesterday was my birthday.
Birthday to Nick.
So you turned 24.
39. Me and Jack Benny. 39 forever.
Very nice.
No, I am 55 years old. Thank you. Thank you. We're paying those two little old ladies in Iowa? Is that what we're doing now?
No, only if you run it for more than 10 seconds.
And we're done. All right. Two measures and we're out. That's the way it goes. Thank you very much. It, Yesterday was my birthday.
And we brought you birthday
cookies. We have birthday
Rob's mom rock. Yes!
There's no question of that. Thank you. Thank you. Very excited about the cookies.
Thank you, Mrs. Linton.
That's right. We're going to start the show, however, talking about a Firefox vulnerability. There's a problem in Firefox where you can put in a URL, that's the domain name, like soundbites.org or whatever. If you click on a link that has a special character in it, oh my golly, those look good. That has a special character in it, it can crash Firefox, it can allow code execution and stuff like that. There's a fix that came out like the same day the thing was announced. It's pretty easy. You'll be able to go back and hear about this again, or you can read it on their website. But it's very simple. In the address bar where you normally type things like soundbites.org, type about:config, and then underneath it you'll see a whole bunch of stuff come up, and then underneath it there'll be a filter line, and there you put network.enableIDN, and double click on that to change it to false, and then you're done. It's over. It's finished. It's that simple. There's been an interesting bunch of discussions on the web about this, because Firefox came out specifically because it's, you know, and touted itself as more secure, less mm-hmm. vulnerable to problems.
Less pop-ups.
Right, less pop-ups, less all of that stuff than Internet Explorer, i.e., or as I call it, i.e.
What'd you say that?
Whenever somebody runs it, that's kind of the way I think it should sound. But this is an exploit in it that's actually fairly... it's fairly obscure. Now, you know, how many places are you going to click on that have that? But
yeah.
Just on the off chance you can. The major difference is that rather than waiting weeks or months for a fix, the fix came out the same day. Well, early the next morning, really. Let's call it the next day.
Well,
certainly within 24 hours.
Still,
just a few hours later.
Right. It was just a few hours later.
I mean, people are still waiting for fixes to IE for Netscape 6.
Right. Absolutely. So it was really kind of nice to see how quickly that came out. Now, I want to before I warn you of this, let me give you our numbers. I should tell you how to give us a call. If you're in the 585 area code, the number is 222-1180. If you're outside the 585 area code, give us a call on the Choice One toll-free line, 800-295-1180. And, of course, if you're a Verizon Wireless customer, *1180 gets you to join in the fun. I should warn you that when you do type about:config in the address bar, you're going to see an amazing amount of stuff there. There are a ridiculous number of things that can be tweaked and changed and played with and everything else. Let me just make this one small suggestion. Don't!
You sure of that? Whoa. There go the eardrum.
Don't play with them. There's stuff in there you really, really don't want to just arbitrarily, randomly change. Just because you can.
When in doubt, leave it alone.
Yeah. When in doubt, keep your dang hands off the dang keys and leave it alone. Firefox was really designed with two things in mind. One was to make it really, really easy to use and fast and clean and nice. But the other thing was to let people play in it. That's where all of the great extensions come in. You can get some amazing extensions, mm-hmm. some very neat ones like weather and things like that, and then some very silly ones like whether or not Abe Vigoda is still alive. You can get all of those little extensions for it, but that comes at the cost of being wide open and available. Anybody can go in and play with a lot of the features of it. So you do have the opportunity to do that, but I would suggest that you not do so.
Right. Unless you want to wind up bringing it to us, or me or Steve.
Right, so really what I should have said was click on everything.
Get a big cat. Click on everything and call Steve and Dave. Job security for Steve and I. That's what keeps us going. I mean, people get in there and play around, and you ask, what'd you do? Oh, nothing. I just went to turn it on this day, and then you start going into the files and find out they were playing it yesterday at this time, and they were on the web here and doing this and doing that.
Yeah, I replaced the logic board and had to download 16 new drivers. But other than that, I didn't do anything.
Right. Yeah. No.
Or my favorite is, what did you do? Nothing. Okay, what didn't you do?
Yeah.
And then I deleted some files, but I don't think I deleted anything important.
Yeah,
you deleted some files, and now it won't reboot.
They were probably important.
Yeah. Somewhere along the line you deleted an important one.
Yeah, I had a client said that, too. He fixed it up and took it home. He says, well, it was working great that night and most of the following day. But then, I says, because he's sitting there saying, you know, it's something wrong we did. You know,
right.
But he's sitting there on the other side of his mouth. He sat there and said, well, no, but it was working last night. So what happened? He goes, well, I should fess up. My wife installed this software.
Uh-huh.
And then it started having problems. Well, then it's nothing we did.
Yeah, you can take your fixed computer home and within an hour reinfect it again, and it'll be just as broken as it was before.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the other part of the problem, of course. We have so many people who find such cool things on the web. You get, you know, emails. Oh, try this. Look at this. It's so cool. It's so neat. It's a little buddy for your machine. It's an angel sitting in the corner. It's, you know, it's whatever.
Different backgrounds.
Special screensavers with waterfalls and things.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of those things is spyware. Every single one of them. And it's fine. If you want to install it, that's great. Go right ahead. But be aware that when you do, you're installing spyware, and that at some point you're going to be bringing your machine back to these guys because the machine is terribly slow and terribly unable to be used, and maybe it's even crashed because you've got so much stuff fighting against itself.
I give all of our PC customers a printed copy of the Security Tango.
Yes. I changed it this week, by the way. I changed the Tango. I added CW Shredder finally.
Good,
it's only been on my list for like a year.
Well, you know, I mean, got other things called up.
And one other thing that I have to tell everybody about, there's a new security alerts button. And if you go to the security alerts button, you'll see several things. One is the Internet Storm Center. Then there's the New York State Cyber Security Alert Level and the Homeland Security Threat Level. Yellow is the new green. A bunch of threats for McAfee and a bunch of other cool stuff, so check that out. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, Dave will tell us all about photo proof sheets and USB hard drives. And we'll be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
These guys can answer your questions. Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites.
So I know. So you feel any older?
There are days I feel really, really older. No, I feel great. You know, I'll tell you what. I never feel old.
Well,
I really don't. I don't feel old. I feel great.
I forget who used to say
my
it,
knees are old.
First thing in the morning when you're trying to get out of bed.
Yeah, my knees are really, really, really old. The rest of me is in good shape. I'm happy.
Like they say, age is just a matter of mind over matter. You don't mind, it don't matter.
That's exactly right. I'm feeling young and frisky as every day. It's a good life. My life is good. I can't argue with that.
Yeah, let's move out of the way.
All right. Our next caller, our first caller, is, I can't read that. The name is right behind.
Sean?
The...
Sean on a cell.
Oh, Sean on a cell phone about a jump drive. Welcome, Sean.
Hi, how are you?
Peachy, how are you?
Very good.
What's your question?
My question is that my daughter has a PC, and I've never been able to get a jump drive to be read on her machine. Nothing comes up. Nothing shows up.
What operating system is she running?
Windows XP.
And is it a laptop or a desktop?
Desktop.
And are the jump drives are the USB drives active in the BIOS?
Yeah, do other USB devices work when you plug it in?
I believe yes.
All right, let's step back a second. A jump drive, or also known as a thumb drive or a flash drive, one of those little devices that you plug into the USB port, and it actually essentially provides another drive on your system. Here's one in my hand. If you can look really closely to the speaker, you'll see it.
That's 200 floppies worth of information I can keep in my pocket.
But, Sean, when you plug that in, though, whether it's the jump drive or whether it's a printer or anything else, the minute you plug it in, if XP was actually seeing it, you should get a little warning down in the lower right-hand corner. Do you get that?
Get nothing.
See, that's why I'm wondering... you might have to have somebody help you through it, but you go into the BIOS and make sure that those those USB ports are open or enabled.
All right.
Because it sounds like they've been disabled, maybe by mistake or whatever, because no matter what device you put on a USB port, the minute you plug it in, whether it's a scanner, a camera, it should automatically come up and say, oh, I found this new device, and it'll give you a nagging warning twice, usually, minimum, down in the lower right-hand corner. If you're not getting that, then that tells me that 10-to-1 odds the USB ports on the motherboard are turned off.
You can also check in your device manager and see if there's any errors specifically on the USB ports.
All righty. We'll do that.
Now, you've tried both the USB ports on the front and in the back?
Did not try any on the back.
Pardon?
Did not try them on the back.
Try them on the back. Maybe because sometimes the cable can fall off. All it is a cable that goes from the front and clips onto the motherboard.
Mm-hmm.
Try clipping it into the back and see if you get the message then.
Yeah, that could tell you that the ones on the front aren't connected.
Yeah, it could be connected or loose. I mean, so definitely try them on the back because those are built onto the motherboard.
Okay.
All right.
Three suggestions. Try on the back, device manager, go into the BIOS and enable them.
Yep.
I'd start with the ones in the back.
Yeah, start with the ones on the back first. I think
a lot of computer companies have started putting USB ports on the front because they know you've got digital cameras and you don't want to have to reach around back all the time.
Yeah, they've been
Some of the chassis, they're not turned on.
Right. The ports are there because they're built into the box, but they're not attached to anything on the motherboard, and so you've got them, but they don't work.
Right. I've been seeing a number of Dells where they do have that connector for the front to hook it up, but it's just laying down in the bottom of the case.
Right.
So I got to sit there and look, hook it up to
somebody
one of the
missed
ports.
Plugging that one in.
That was actually you were going to talk about USB drives.
Yeah. Well, that and another great tip. I was kind of slow this week.
And, only two tips.
No, one because there's a double. You'll see a double there.
Oh yeah,
instead of hitting before I got to type in the text, I hit submit. And it doesn't let me edit it, so I had to wait a day.
Because
I can only do one a day.
Really?
I had to wait till the next day to go in there and resubmit it. So I've been a little slow there. But one of my other tips, since more and more folks are going to digital photography, because they are so cheap and a lot of fun.
Sure.
You know, back in the day, you used to be able to, say, take your Kodak film in and get it on CD, and you'd also get a proof sheet. Well, now if you're doing a lot of your own stuff and still want that proof sheet, I've put up one of my tips is on how to create proof sheets. So if you've got various photos in it and you want to kind of share them, just give a small little thumbnail of it, you can do up proof sheets. And if you go to our website and look under Dave's tips, I've got a tip there as far as creating proof sheets. And when I come back, I'd like to talk about USB hard drives. And then you can go on with...
All right, and then we're going to talk about Roker and Nano and all the new buzzwords from Apple when we come back from the break with Dave and Steve and Rob. and me, and we're going to talk to you folks on the phone, and we'll give you that URL for patching Firefox, and we'll do it all when we come back. But first, we're going to have the news. A lot more news coming up. What? Why are you giving me that face?
There's
I can do
30
that.
Seconds
I'm
left.
Filling the time. There's 30 seconds left. We can talk for 30 seconds. What, you think I can't talk for 30 seconds?
He's the birthday boy.
We're
going to
tell you folks all about these things. I'm the birthday boy, buddy boy. We're on Soundbites. It's 1180 WHAM. And don't you forget it. Back on the other side of the news with a whole lot more computer stuff.
Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Bender.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton. Can I just say something? Okay, I'm going to anyway because I have the buttons. She was doing a newscast and doing a marvelous job, might I say. And here are you guys with the cookies and the wrapping and the... That was rude.
Yeah, what's your point?
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you know.
Your mom took time to put the cookies between different layers. She gave us three different types of cookies
Yeah,
here.
That's right.
So we gotta go.
Very
through.
Sweet of her. She's a sweet,
she's
lovely
a
woman. And
don't
she really
criticize your mother.
Better.
I'm not criticizing my mother.
Yes,
I'm
you are.
I'm
yes,
sick
you are.
And tired of you saying bad
that.
Things about your mother
yeah,
because
we'll get
she's a sweet and wonderful woman.
She is a great lady.
Well, you're
she
still
takes care of
yes.
us.
You gotta respect
right,
the
anyway,
woman.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
All right. So yeah. You wanted to talk about USB hard drives?
Yeah. Just quickly, in talking with the jump drives and that, USB hard drives are becoming a very popular way of backing up your data. Because within a small enclosure, you can hook it up to USB 2, which is fast.
Yeah, that's the one thing I wanted to mention. Make sure you get USB 2 drives on USB 2 computers. USB 1 hard drives are really, 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 really slow.
Yeah, really.
And you can put literally any size hard drive you want into it, even up to 300 gig, and set up a backup routine to back it up to this external drive and then put it away or take it home, you know, if you're at a business and take it home. And it's a safe place. They're becoming very popular.
Yeah, they're very nice. Now,
LaCie has a 2 terabyte external drive.
Yeah, that's a little more than most of us need.
It's 400 or 500 gigs in one box.
I ought to be able to put most of my
OTR
on that. My old-time radio shows.
And it's only like $1,500. You remember when hard drives were $1,000 a meg?
Yeah.
Now they're $1,000 for a trillion megs.
Yeah, exactly. It's ridiculous. At any rate, we have Nano, and is it Rocker?
Something
you sit in, or is it,
like
or is it Roker like L?
Right. Motorola and Apple this week announced a new convergence, synergy, any other buzzword you want to say.
Yeah, it's all buzzword compliant.
Buzzword compliant. The first cell phone that has iTunes built into it, the Motorola Roker, and now a promotion with Singular wireless cellular service. So the Motorola and Singular. Basically, what it does is it's a standard cell phone that also has iTunes in it, so that you can sync it with your computer, Mac or PC, and put about 100. Actually, only 100. There was an interesting marketing ploy there. You can only put 100 songs into your phone, and some of the new commercials are really neat. You know, some people walking down the street and their shadow is dancing,
wild.
and you can see those commercials on Singular's website. We'll have that link posted in a minute. We're starting to hear some compatibility issues. You know, the phone was only announced on Tuesday, hit the stores late Tuesday, early Wednesday. We're already
hearing a little.
Well, people that were rushing to buy them first are finding there's some syncing problems, plugging the phone in and syncing their music. Apple has already released a driver update.
Wow.
So we were talking earlier about Firefox releasing an update the next day. Apple has done that as well with the iTunes phone driver. So it's kind of interesting to see what's going to happen as more and more cell phones are adding music and video. You know, there've been still cameras for a while, and some of the phones can now take video clips, and now we're adding music. And then on the other side, we've got the Handspring Trio. Where it's a PDA that they've put a phone in, and so now we're then the Life Drive. We're seeing a convergence of all the different technologies.
Now I wonder if with this new phone, you know how if you get another person calling you, you can hit the send dial and it switches over.
Yeah, call.
What you be able to do is have a piece of music playing like Muzak for the person that's on hold.
Oh, nice.
No, I'm saying that's what they should do.
That's what they should do.
That's what they should do. That'd
yeah,
that'll be next. It'll be eventually be able to do everything. So what's the battery life like on this thing?
Well, they're saying, I'm trying to bring that review back up.
I mean, if you spend all day playing music and then suddenly you get a phone call, are you out of luck or what?
It uses a 512 meg memory card.
Right.
So it's not the hard drive based iPod players. It's a flash memory based player, and the theory is that the battery will last a long time because there's no moving parts.
But still not like you say. Usually, if your phone's just sitting there in the cradle, it's not being utilized. But if it's playing music, it's got to take some resources.
I've been playing with a cell phone that has a full PDA in it. It also does your email and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And the battery's gone overnight. You have to go in and say, don't check for mail overnight, or else it'll call and connect and try to get your email. And you make 15, 20 calls overnight, and your battery's gone.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same thing that we're seeing now with cell phones and music players. You just got to remember to plug them in at night.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So you got to charge them up every night.
Exactly.
The other major announcement that came out was the new iPod Nano, which is even smaller than the iPod Mini, which was Apple's smallest full-featured iPod. It's a little bigger than the Shuffle, but one of the things that we're saying is it's thinner than a pencil. It's flash-based memory, 2 gig or 4 gig, and it's really, really thin with a really bright color screen. It replaces the iPod Mini in the product line, but the Mini had a bigger hard drive. So if you want more songs, the Mini's a better deal.
All right, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to continue our Mac theme. Are Mac people safe? Are they leading charmed lives, or are they just lucky? More when we come back to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Hi, this is computer talk that you can understand. Now back to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And before we get back to the Mac stuff, we have Mike from Fairport on the phone. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Hi, I've got Windows XP Home and would like to have the computer turn on in the middle of the night, do a backup, and shut off. I see in my BIOS that I can set a turn-on time. I got to admit, though, I tried it once and think it didn't work, but haven't tried it again.
Well, why don't you just, set it, schedule it to do it automatically, say at 11 o'clock at night, you just turn off the monitor.
Yeah, actually, I tried, I set it for, 10 minutes. This was yesterday morning, I think. I tried it at 9:20 in the morning.
To do a backup and then just shut the computer off.
Right.
You can't get it. Turn-on feature doesn't really...
Windows doesn't really do a good job of turning itself on and off.
That's a BIOS feature, and it's...
What program are you using to do your backup?
I didn't even get to configuring that, but I was going to use a program called Handy Backup.
Okay, and does it have the feature that once it does it, that'll shut the machine down?
Well, it has a feature that when it's before or after the backup, or both before and after, you can have it run another program. So I figured I'd just do a command line to shut the machine down.
Yeah, you can.
And
do
even
that.
If it didn't shut down, that's no big deal. I've
got a tip in there for. Under my tips on how to create two shortcuts, and it's a command line, essentially, to just do either a restart or a shutdown. So if you're looking for the command line, go to Dave's tips, and I've got, again, there two commands that if you get tired of going to start, going to a computer, and then saying either restart or shutdown, you can put two little icons right on your desktop, and it's the command lines that you can create, and it just... Well, you just click on that one. It'll either shut it down depending on which one you click on. So you can look at that command line and how to create it.
Yeah, in fact, there's another issue too, I guess, but the Handy Backup Pro will take care of that. By the way, I'm not advertising that. Anyways, in order for the backup to happen, I need to be logged onto the desktop, but the Handy Backup Pro will run as a server.
Well, it doesn't matter one way or the other. If you've got it and you set it up, say, for, let's say you go to bed at 11 every night. You set it to run at 11:30 and then shut the machine down. You just, when you're done working, just walk away.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's the way to do it. And then let it run by itself. Don't shut your machine off. Let it run, and it'll shut the machine down.
What a concept.
There you go.
That's a great solution. Although, let me just clarify here. I would like to know. It sounds to me, then, that you don't have any thought that the BIOS startup doesn't
work. No, that won't work.
No.
Because you can't run a specific program.
Right.
So you're really going to have to do it this way.
And that's the way to do it.
That's probably your best way to do it.
And that auto startup usually doesn't work that well anyway.
Yeah.
Right. Now, to go back to our Macintosh question, there's a Mac administrator in Australia who's warning Mac users they need to get their act together virus-wise before that first big virus hits. So far, the Mac people have been pretty complacent.
Yeah.
And not quietly so about the fact that they don't have a lot of viruses. And notice they didn't say they don't have no viruses. They don't have a lot of viruses. So what do you think about this, and
well,
how should people proceed?
He does have a point that someone could write a Mac virus. So far they haven't. And one of the issues is that the underlying Unix operating system is what Apple calls a mature operating system based on BSD Unix developed in the 60s. So we've had the last 40 years to close all the security holes in Unix. And the big issue with Windows and viruses is that there are so much of a tie-in between a website and the operating system that a website will run a program for you, and security holes in Windows that they didn't realize someone would be able to exploit this feature, Windows just makes a much better target. Now, we tell most of our Mac customers that they probably want to run an antivirus program anyway, just to catch the Windows viruses that might come through. They can't affect your Mac, but you want to be a nice net citizen.
But you are running a system where you can install programs and things can run in the background.
Right, but when it installs, it has to ask for your password.
Well,
there's potential there, and people need to realize that and keep up on it. But
all right,
so
we're going to take another break. When we come back, it's all about the emails on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
It's the big. It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And we have email. And Steve
first?
Will start.
Okay. we have an email from Kurt, who is...
Email comes to us on our website at soundbites.org. There's a link where you can,
email
you can send
question.
Email.
And I'll pick maybe, if I feel like it, maybe one or two a week.
Sure.
Otherwise, I try to get back to everybody on them if I can, time permitting. But I brought one in for Steve.
Yeah, and I like how you gave this one to me. It starts off, Dear Sirs, which who's he writing to? He just switched from Mac OS 9 to Windows. Thank you.
Yeah.
And he has some old DVD RAMs that he would like to convert into his PC. Now, DVD RAM was an early DVD format that Apple tried many, many years ago before the current DVD standards were out. And it had a real big advantage, and it was random access. It acted like a hard drive. You could write to it, erase it, delete files from it, write more files to it. You didn't have to author it like you do CDs and DVDs
so
now.
So it's an actual DVD.
Right.
But when you put it in your machine, it acts like a real hard drive,
read, write, change,
everything. Yeah.
Random access memory was the DVD RAM.
Right.
And there were several types, type 1 and type 2, and several capacities, up to 5.2 gigabytes, which was huge 10 years ago.
Yeah.
The issue that he's running into is that his PC doesn't have a DVD RAM drive, so he can't read his DVD RAM discs, and
right.
Yeah, that's pretty much right. Some of the DVD RAMs, I actually forgot to look up whether it was type 1 or type 2, the DVD RAM disc itself comes in a plastic cartridge, kind of like the old hard 3.5-inch floppy disks. So some of the DVD RAM types you can take out of the cartridge and use as a straight disk in a DVD ROM reader. But the trick there is that not all DVD ROM readers can read a DVD RAM drive. You'll have to check the specs on your reader. The other problem, too, is that PCs cannot generally read a Macintosh disk. He goes on to say that his local PC place said he could use an external hard drive, but the Mac is Linux-based and the PC couldn't read it. You may not want to go back to that service shop. The Mac is Unix-based and has nothing to do with the PC not reading the Mac disks. It's the Mac file format. You can buy a program called Mac Drive from a company called Media4 to let a Windows PC read a Mac disk. The easier way is on your Mac, format the disk for Windows. Macintosh has been able to create Windows disks for 20 years, and you can put your data files on a Windows disk on a Mac and then take that disk to the PC. So he's got several issues involved here, trying to get a DVD RAM reader for his PC,
right?
Or getting an external hard drive or flash drive or something like that. Or if depending on how big his files are, he can email them to himself.
Right,
which is
from the old machine to the new. Assuming you still got the old machine.
Right, if the old machine is still working, what you can do is use an email account that offers mail storage. So you like the Frontier account.
Frontier Gmail or one of those.
Right, so you can upload all your files into that mail storage from one computer and then download them all to the other computer. So the big trick there is getting the file format right, getting the disk format right. So it's jumping many generations in.
Right, and
in
this
computing.
Goes back to something we were talking about last week, which is at some point, whatever medium you're using may no longer be readable in the future. Like, for example, you've got paper tape.
Right. No one has a paper tape reader anymore.
Or punch cards.
Right.
You know, who's got punch card readers? So now he's got a DVD RAM, which is not a format that made it, and so there aren't a lot of readers.
And it was a great technology at the time, but
yes.
CD-RW beat it.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, here's the other question, though. If he doesn't have the old machine anymore, can you think of any place he can take those disks to be read and put on it? You know, if he brings the disk and one of those jump drives or flash drives somewhere.
Right. Basically, you try to find a shop that has both formats, and we at the Jesse Group, we might be able to still find a DVD RAM drive.
What about if he still has his old machine?
Yeah, if the old machine is still working, then you can convert the disk into a different media format onto CD-RW. CD is a generic format, onto an external hard drive in Windows format, the FAT32 format.
Right, or mail it, all the stuff, all the
right.
other stuff you
if,
said.
If the old machine is still
working.
Assuming
the old machine is still working and
right.
still can connect to the network or whatever. Or it's got a USB connector on
or
it. And you
Ethernet
can,
connector on it.
Right. So those are really his choices at this point.
Right.
If it's still working, he's got a lot of options. If the old machine is not still working, then he's got to start letting his fingers do the walking and make a few calls and see if he can find somebody with anybody really with a working DVD RAM drive should be able to read the thing and then convert it to that you know whatever
into CD-ROM.
So you might want to go to the Cider Group and you might want to talk about that
the
and
Apple
ask around.
And the meeting is coming up this week Wednesday at East High School, 7:00. We're actually going to be talking about eBay, but it's a great place to meet other Mac users and network.
Excellent. Yeah, the local user groups are a great place to go. We've got links, I think, to the local user groups on our website at soundbites.org. We're going to take a break. It's time for the news again. The ladies are in to do the news. I'm very excited to see this. It's going to be wonderful. When we come back, Microsoft regularly releases patches once a month on a Tuesday. When we come back, we'll find out why this Tuesday will be different from all other Tuesdays. When we come back with Dave Enright, and Steve Ray, and Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco, and all of you, don't forget, we're going to take your phone calls, we're going to read some more email, we've got a whole bunch of other stuff to talk about on the greatest computer show in the known universe, and as you all know, that would be Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180, the Choice 1 toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180, or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Give us a call if you're in the 585 area code. It's 222-1180. If you're outside the 585 area code, it's 800-295-1180 on the Choice One toll-free line. Also, Verizon Wireless customers can give us a call at star 1180. Before we get to the phones, however, we want to talk about Patch Day. As you know, Microsoft patches their systems once a month, whether they need it or not, on a Tuesday.
And they usually do.
And they usually do. Except for this month. On Friday, they pulled the patch that was supposed to be available for next Tuesday, saying that a lot more testing is needed. Apparently, they have discovered that the patch they were preparing really didn't do everything they hoped that it would do, and in fact caused even more problems. And so consequently, they've pulled the patch, which means that whatever fixes and don't exist anymore, and so the whatever security holes they were hoping to patch are still out there. And you may think to yourself, well, that's okay if we don't know what the patches were, we don't know what the security holes were. But the reality is, the virus writers already know what the security holes are. They knew them well before the before anything else. So that's a problem. Now that leads me to a point. I'm a systems administrator, and we spend a lot of time checking patches. When you get a patch, you put it on a standard
patch
system
machine,
and you test them, and then you roll them out to people. And you got to do that in a really timely manner. We saw that last month.
Yeah.
But the problem is they patch so much at once that on the one hand, you only have to check one patch a month. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you don't have any idea whether it was, you know, what might have worked or not worked or what caused the problem or what didn't cause a problem. If they broke them out, you could at least say, oh, I suspect this would cause a problem with my systems, but I can roll out the rest of
it. And it's so hard to know what little tiny function may not work. I remember one patch, that came out from Apple once, and they had a list of known issues. And if you try to print a purple ampersand on a black field with an ImageWriter 2, your computer will crash.
Yeah.
So how many prints did someone make before they found that specific bug?
Yeah, exactly.
Too much free time.
Exactly. Yeah. It's an interesting problem. But those of you who do your patch, who actually do your patches, you don't have to worry about doing them this Tuesday because unless they decide Monday to put it back out again, it ain't happening. We're going to go to the phones now, and we're going to talk to Herm from Ontario. Welcome, Herm. What's your question?
Hi. I got a question for Steve. I have a G4 dual processor.
Macintosh.
Oh, Macintosh, right. Excuse me. But when I shut down, it continues to restart. It doesn't go to a shutdown.
There's a couple of things it could be. Some of the Macs have a button on the back that you can lock on, intending to be a server. So if the power ever fails or the computer ever shuts down, it automatically turns itself back on. So that's a hard physical button on the back of the computer. I don't think any of the G4s had that, but the Xservs did. The other setting is in the energy saver system preference. There's also a setting to automatically turn on after a power failure. So again, if your computer is being used as a server, you always want it to be on. So if the power fails, you want it to turn itself back on. If you manually shut it down, it thinks the power failed and turns itself back on. So that automatically turn after power failure, and then a second setting for scheduling to turn on at any given time. One of our previous Windows callers, that doesn't work under Windows. It works very well under the Mac. You can schedule your Mac to turn on and turn off at specific times. So that's all in the energy saver system preference. So you might want to check in there to make sure it's not accidentally turned on.
I thought I looked there. I thought it happened right after I attempted to clean the keyboard. Would one of the keys get stuck down and do that?
Yeah, if your power key is stuck down, it thinks you're turning it back on again, and it will try to turn back on.
On this G4, it doesn't have a power key. You have to turn it on from the front of the...
Yeah, they took the power keys off the keyboard for a while. There is no power key on the keyboard. There's a shutdown key on the keyboard. If you use Control Eject, that brings up the shutdown menu. But that wouldn't make it turn back on again.
Yeah. Well, it must be in the power savings settings, and I'll have to go back and look.
It could also be the button on the front of the computer is stuck in a little bit and restarting itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you've ever taken the case off And when you put it back on, if it didn't align 100% properly, yeah, it could be pushing that button.
Yeah, on the Mac, the thing opens from the side, so it doesn't. The front never gets opened.
Yeah, right. In some of the early cases, the button on the outside was a plastic button that pushed a plastic lever that pushed a plastic other thing. So right, if it wasn't all lined up, right.
Right. Anyway, Herm, try that stuff and let us know. Our next caller is Dick on a cell phone. Welcome, Dick. You're pulled over to the side of the road, right?
Yes, I am. I'm pulled over sitting here talking to you.
That's very good. You got the windows rolled down? Is it nice weather out now?
I've got the air on. Are you kidding? Anyway, I was told I was going to be humiliated because I'm using Microsoft Outlook.
Yeah.
Sorry. But anyway, here's my deal. When I'm typing an email, I can be typing away and I'm a two-finger typer, but I'm quick. And I'm typing away, and then all of a sudden I look up at the screen, and I'm like four lines I've typed ahead of me, but the cursor, it stopped typing.
And then it catches up.
No, it doesn't catch up at all. I've got to go back, move my mouse up to where I was, click on it with the mouse, and then my cursor comes back, and I can start typing again.
Are you on a laptop?
No. Mm. No.
And you've run the Adware and SpyBot?
Does it happen in other programs or just Outlook? Or Outlook's the only thing you type in.
Well, Outlook's the only thing I type in. You know,
yeah.
You know, if you shut off, if you, now I'm on a wireless. I have a wireless setup in my house. If I turn off the wireless setup and I can go right ahead and just, it works. My wife says it works like good. It works fine.
Yeah,
without it.
That sounds like you've got some spyware or virus in the background is taking control of your computer and doing something.
Right. Now I've got Adware. I've got Adware, I've got SpyBot, and I'm running the Norton 2005. But, I mean, I run them, and it says, you know, it picks up some stuff, and it gets rid of it.
Have you danced the full Security Tango?
No.
You need to go to securitytango.com.
Nick has added CW Shredder, which is another utility.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got that, too. And I run that.
Go to the Security Tango and click on the Let's Dance button and follow every step right along. Don't skip any and don't change anything.
Okay.
Basically, it'll tell you to download a whole bunch of software and then reboot into safe mode and clean your system. It may get you to turn off
restore,
which means you lose all your restore points. But if they're corrupted anyway, you want them gone.
Got to get rid of them, yeah.
Another thing to check is check in your settings and see how often Outlook is scheduled to check for new mail. I've seen some people that have their new mail check every minute instead of half an hour or an hour. So it could be that Outlook stops looking at your typing while it looks to get new mail.
And in fact, gives the focus to another window so that you lose focus in the window you're typing in, which means it won't type in there anymore.
Exactly. See, I've never changed that setting or done anything to that setting. So
yeah, particularly, well, I think it's set for like 5 or 10 minutes. But if you're a two-finger typist and it's a long email, you could be in it for 10 minutes.
Yeah, Mike. Yeah.
Might want to consider moving over to Mozilla's Thunderbird for your email program. Because one, you won't get as much. You've got better junk control than Outlook.
Okay.
And you know,
if you're not going to an Exchange server, Outlook doesn't do you any favors.
Okay.
If you're going to your work mail, and your work mail is on a Microsoft Exchange server, then Outlook is definitely what you need to be using.
And I'm not doing anything like that at all.
Then you really, Outlook is not doing you any favors.
Okay.
And actually doing you a lot of harm.
And can do you a lot of harm.
All right.
Whereas when you get something like Thunderbird, you'll find that, A, it's easier to set up. B, it's certainly a lot more lightweight. Now, you don't get the calendar and all that stuff, but if you're not using those...
I don't use any of that.
See,
there you go.
I click on it and get my email. That's it.
Right, and then you'll find a couple of things. One is that Thunderbird is a much smaller program and therefore takes up a lot less memory, and therefore you can run more things at once and they switch faster.
Okay, and I'm on Roadrunner, so I've...
There you go.
It's quick. So
yeah.
where would I find the Thunderbird?
Mozilla.org/Thunderbird, and it's absolutely free.
And one of the features, when you're installing Thunderbird, it'll sit there and tell you, oh, wait a minute, you're using Outlook. Do you want to import all your settings? You just
and your
click
mail?
Next, and it pulls everything, your old emails, all your contacts, everything.
And let me make a general plea to everyone to change your mail to not look every minute or every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Half an hour, an hour.
Right.
It bogs down the rest of the internet. You have a million people looking for mail every minute. Everyone's going to get delayed while they're looking for mail every minute.
Right. And it slows your system down, and it slows everybody else's system down, and it's unnecessary. If you really can't wait a minute for your mail, pick up a phone. I'm sorry, but that's just the way that works. Our next caller is David from Brighton, New York. What's your question, David?
Yeah, hi. I switched to Thunderbird, Mozilla.
Good job.
And but I found that now when I highlight text and I want to print just that selection, that option is not available. The selection option, it comes up in the dialog box, but it's not highlighted. There's no option to click that to print only the selected text.
I would have thought that was more the printer driver, not the program.
Yeah, I'm just bringing up Thunderbird myself right now. I run it at work, but I never print just selected text. I always print an entire email. I hide the headers and all of that stuff, and then I just print the email. That's a lovely question. I don't have an answer. I don't have an instantaneous answer.
I see the Mozilla Getting Started guide. A lot of people asking the same question. Let me see if anyone posted an answer.
I would say print selected area. Go to print.
Yeah, we're trying to
find. Well, I don't have a printer. There's not much I'm going to be able to do to that.
What you can do is just select the area, and then when you go to your print, and then the properties, I believe you can say select printed.
He's saying
print selected area.
Yeah, he's saying there isn't one on his Thunderbird.
Well, I'll have to look that up, David. Yeah. I'm afraid I don't have a printer installed here, and so it won't let me try to print something, obviously. But I'll look that up, and we'll get back to you on that question. I'm sorry, I apologize.
Apparently, there is a button there called selection. I'm reading through the Thunderbird forums. There's a button there, but it doesn't seem to be activated, so no one can turn it on. Possibly a update to Thunderbird will fix that.
Yeah. Or it could be one of the
security patches.
Extensions.
Yeah, you might need to to install an add-on to get that to happen.
Yeah,
right. There are a lot of them. You can go
through some of the help there, and that might give you a little more insight on some of the other stuff. That, like they were saying, the other add-ins that you might want to consider putting into it, and some of the other features that are there that a lot of folks don't realize because they don't take the time to go through the help and find out about those.
Right, there's about 130 extensions to Thunderbird. I'd find it difficult to believe that absolutely none of them
would resolve this issue.
Would resolve that issue. So I would suggest you take a look at that. Again, some of them are just silly, but a lot of them are actually extremely useful, and you should check that out. That's again at Mozilla.org. That's where you would find that. So give that a shot.
Your wife just called.
My wife just called?
Yes. She said, you can do that. She goes, I do it all the time. My husband might not, but I do.
Well,
you just highlight what you want to print, and you click print, and boom, it goes.
She's using Eudora.
Well, although that's an interesting point. Maybe it automatically prints your selection.
That's true.
If you have something selected, it prints just that.
That's true.
Rather than
I don't
the
know.
Whole list.
I don't know because, like I said, I don't have a printer installed here, and I never do that. I always print the entire email because I need to have
all the information.
All the information. So
well, as a workaround, do a copy, open Notepad, do a paste, and print.
Okay.
3 or 4 clicks, and you'll get it.
Right. But that's not as nice as being able to just print it. But I will look into that. Our next segment, we're going to come back in just a few minutes. We're going to talk about low-life scum-sucking rat bags. When we come back, and it's not us.
Had me worried.
When we come back on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve.
I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. I just want to say we've got somebody from Northeastern University in Boston listening in their dorm. You can't hide. You can't run. It's time to get all your friends together and start your own little Soundbites fan club.
Ooh, cool.
In Boston. I think that's a great idea. Listen, I said when we come back, we talk about...
Before we start that, to our previous caller about print selection in Thunderbird. That is a known bug. Bug number 66806, if anyone's interested. And presumably they'll fix that in the next release.
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go.
When I came back, I said we'd talk about scum-sucking low-life rat bags, and it wouldn't be us.
Thank goodness.
Here's the deal. We all know Hurricane Katrina has caused massive devastation, and victims and relief organizations need all the help we can give them. Naturally, scam artists and thieves are preying on the generous and kind-hearted people. Be careful to whom you give your money. There are a lot of places on the web that are saying, oh, we have, you know, Katrina relief and, you know, Katrina this and that. And the reality is most of them, the folks who get the money will never actually donate it.
Especially to emails. I mean, you know, if you want to visit an actual, like, Red Cross website or something like that, that's one thing.
Right.
But just to respond to a random email?
Well, for example, there's a guy named Robert Moneyhan, which is a kind of funny name. He's also known as Demon Moon, by the way. He's the webmaster for KatrinaHelp.com, KatrinaDonations.com, KatrinaReliefFund.com, and KatrinaRelief.com. And the Attorney General in Florida, which is where this guy is, alleges these were used to direct donations to Moneyhan's private PayPal account, and none of that money ever went anywhere near Katrina. So
now, can he be charged with fraud?
Oh, he's in some trouble now.
Figures, you know, some, like you say, scum sucker is going to, a minute something like that happens, quick, register those sites, names, and then do something devious like this. I mean, there's a lot of folks still down there, you know, going through.
They need the help. There's no question they need the help. But if you're going to donate to some place that's known to be
American
okay. There
Red
are links,
Cross,
for example.
Salvation Army.
Right.
I mean, there's plenty of telethons going on. There was one just last night again. You know, they give you 800 right. numbers where the
if
money
you go,
will actually go there.
If you go to wham1180.com, you will find a link right there to the American Red Cross to help the Katrina victims. That's probably your best bet right now. The reality is these people need... the thing they need most is money right now. I know a lot of people want to collect goods and send them down. The reality is it costs them more to deliver it than it would to buy it in huge bulk lots
and
get it shipped in. So send them money and go to wham1180.com. Right near the top of the screen is Help the Hurricane Victims, and there you are.
Yesterday in Irondequoit, they were, I don't know if they were doing it in the other towns, but the local fire departments were out having a boot drive for Katrina.
A boot drive?
A boot drive, where they stand out in the street and they got the boot.
Oh, yeah.
And sit there and drop in money. So first I had to go out and I had to go over to Culver Ridge to pick up some pet food. I get nailed by the fire department over there.
Sure.
Coming up. And then I had to go on up to Home Depot. And I come on back, drop some stuff off, and I had to go back down Empire Boulevard to Laurelton.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
you got hit
of
there.
Course... I said, I already gave you. Where's your ticket? Busted. I already took it into the house.
Right, right, right.
Sticker. So, me feeling guilty.
Sure.
I sat there to give it again.
Sure.
Yeah, you hate to use that gave it the office excuse.
Right, 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 right.
Yeah,
right.
No, those things, you know.
Every time I see one, I reach into my pocket. There's no question.
Yeah, same here. Yeah. But at least coming back, though, because I had to go down Empire and then come back up.
You had your
and
ticket.
I had a different guy. I sat there, showed my ticket, he gave me a thumbs up, and I was able to get through that time.
All right, before we move on, I want to talk a little bit about our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Every week we do a poll. Last week's poll was about what email program you use. I'm delighted to say that the majority of you, 29% of you, use Thunderbird, followed, unfortunately, by Outlook Express and web-based email and Outlook. Eudora's way down there. 12 of you just click the Macintosh. You don't know what you use. Followed by Mail, which is the Macintosh program. I want to thank you.
They pulled a Microsoft. And Microsoft has been known for naming their programs really silly generic names.
Right.
Word.
Right. And you guys use Mail. So the Microsoft
mail.
Couldn't, apparently. 364 of you voted.
Well, there was Microsoft
number 64
Mail.
On the all-time hit list. We want to thank you for that. This week's poll is about your music playing preference for the iPod that just came out. The choices are the iPod, the iPod Shuffle, the iPod Nano, another MP3 player, a CD player, radio, I play an instrument, I sing, music's not that important to me, and other leave an opinion. So far, radio is winning with 26% of the vote, followed by iPod. 82 of you have voted so far. When you're done voting, underneath the poll, you'll see a little yellow box. If you click on Give Us Your Opinion, it will take you to my website at AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. You're right. No, that's a good one. When where we're a cut above the rest, and you can leave your AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com.
That one doesn't work either.
Yeah,
there we are.
That's AskNick.com. Oh, we're done? Okay, all right. Where you can leave an opinion, and you can tell us a little bit more about your music playing preference, because I know you people, and you're long-winded, and the last thing you want to do is just click a little button. You need to actually leave an opinion, so please
interact.
Do so. Remember to keep it clean. Remember to keep it. And let's stop getting down on each other about our choices. Let's try to keep it civilized and
polite. Can't we all get along?
Can't we all just get along? And so that's yet another thing we do on our website. And once you're done with that, please come back to our website. There's an amazing amount of wonderful stuff that goes on our website. We have forums where we have forums where you can go in and talk to other people and get questions answered, and
especially
and
the more technical like questions we can't really answer on the phone.
Right, particularly because with those, you know, there's a lot of, I mean, they're long-winded explanations, and you want to point people to half a dozen websites that give examples of things and this and that, and it's always best to be able to do that right from the machine. So you can get your more technical questions answered there. You can send us an email if you'd rather do that. You can see a log of all the calls we received and a summary of them. Certainly a list of the websites we mention every week. For those of you who would like to take Soundbites with you, you can go to there's a link to the podcasting feed. Steve is kind enough to record the show every week and put it up.
Get
and
it up there.
And he's got the quality up much better than it was, and so we're all good on that.
Yeah, so it's the trade-off in speed, size versus quality. It's a 20 meg file now. To make the quality any better, the
right.
file's got to be bigger.
Right. So but the point is, if you're on, well, and it's a real question, isn't it? If you're on broadband and you're on a podcast and it downloads overnight, even if you're not on broadband, you don't care how long it takes.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to just download and listen to it on your own, then that's hard.
Yeah, I think I'd rather see quality than, you know.
I guess, yeah. I'm not quite sure what to do there. Of course, it's a mono broadcast, so if you're recording it in stereo, you can cut out one whole channel and cut it
in
half.
Yeah, I do that. Yeah, the file starts out at nearly half a gig.
That's high quality.
Right, it's uncompressed audio. I'm not
right.
compressing on the fly. So from 500 megs down to 20 megs is quite a bit of compression.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
In most iPods, it's not a heck of a lot of space.
Well, I was more thinking the download time. If you're not on broadband, downloading a 20 meg file is several hours.
Yes, it is.
Uninterrupted connection, which can be tricky on dial-up.
But the reality is most people who do podcasts are probably on broadband, I would tend to think. So a larger file size, giving better quality, probably is not much of a problem.
We should do a poll. Larger file size or smaller file size?
That's a great idea. Email me that, and I'll make it next week's poll, and we'll figure that out. Because we know that you'd like to have the highest quality. We'd like to put our best foot forward, but we also want to be able to accommodate all the people who have slower connections.
We should take a poll on how many folks actually own an iPad.
Well, that's sort of what this week's poll is. It doesn't have to be an iPod. You can do a podcast on any MP3 player.
Right, on any MP3 player and right on your computer. So you can download a podcast to your machine.
Just happens to be the guy that started podcasting happened to have an iPod.
Right. So we called it podcasting. And now there are programs. One of my favorite under Linux is called Podcatcher. So you can grab podcasts. You don't have to put them anywhere. You just play them right off your Linux box. So that's kind of nice. I have my handheld that I
So is the companion program called Pod Pitcher?
No. It's the Podcaster. Hello.
Podcast.
Podcatch.
He's got too much free time.
Well, that's the other half of podcasting. A lot of people want to make their own podcast. Yeah, in very generic terms, podcast is your own radio show.
Yeah, basically what you do is you create any sort of audio feed, maybe you talking. If you're playing
reading
music,
books.
You've got a problem, because unless it's music you wrote, then it's copyrighted and you have to deal with the ASCAP and places like that and the RCIA, the RIAA and all of that. But if for example, you just want to talk about things and put your own radio show together, all you have to do is record it, and then you have to be able to put it somewhere, and suddenly it's a podcast.
Well, somebody was doing it for, like, books.
An audio blog.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Literally, so folks could listen to a book being read.
Well, let's talk about that. Gutenberg, gutenberg.org.
There you go.
One of the greatest sites on the web, gutenberg.org. Bunch of books are available online at gutenberg.org.
We should put that link there.
I think we have.
I think we do, too. It's gutenberg.org. I'm sure it's already on our list. But what they have audio ebooks available, as well as regular books to download and read. They have audio books available. Now, some of them are read by humans, and some of them are read by computers. So I don't know how many of those computer-read books you really wanted to download and listen to, but they have both available. And you can get all kinds of stuff from that. It's actually pretty neat. If you go to gutenberg.org and click on the audio link.
Too many folks think of computer voices like from Space Odyssey 2000. What's wrong, Hal?
Right.
But it's a lot more mechanical.
Yeah, it's a lot more mechanical. They got 391 titles read by computers, and readings by people. There's a lot of stuff here. Pretty interesting stuff. A lot of it is older stuff. Most of the Sherlock Holmes books, for example, a bunch of stuff by Rudyard Kipling and some Shakespeare sonnets, things like that. Tale of Peter Rabbit for kids. I had a lot of some Edgar Allan Poe things. What's nice about that is I point my daughter there all the time for school books, for the stuff they're reading in school. A lot of the classics are available there. She can download them and listen to them on her iPod.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
As you're walking home from school or whatever, or what,
She's a good reader. She reads a lot, and we do that. But if she wants to take a second listen to something or listen to it as she falls asleep at night, she can put it on her iPod and go for it.
It's fantastic. I wish more kids would get into that.
Yeah.
Because that's a problem. A lot of them don't take the time to read books.
Right. And if you are a reader, Gutenberg.org is one of the best places to go. It's great.
We have a lot of kids going back to college have already started, and we were talking with some customers this week, and one guy was saying that his books are $1,800 a quarter.
Yeah.
They're horribly expensive.
Ludicrously huge.
Speaking about going back to school, one caller called in and wanted to know Intel versus AMD. Basically, like we were kidding around.
What the
air.
Heck does that have to do with going back to school? Never mind, it was your segue. Go for it.
What computer?
Buying a computer. Right now, a lot of folks are being faced with buying a computer. And quite often they don't know, well, should I get an AMD or should I get an Intel?
Yeah.
And the question is, it depends on the feature.
Yeah.
Because,
the answer is, it depends.
Yeah, it depends on what you're going to do for it. Now, if you're going to have the average student say that it's going to just be doing reports, checking his email, doing his iTunes and all that, probably a very basic AMD Athlon 64 3000 with 512 mega memory would be great. But on the other hand, if you're going to, say, engineering school, now there you might want to bump it up. You want to get a system that's, say, a Pentium 4, say a 3.4 gigahertz, at least a gig of memory. You're going to want a larger hard drive. You're going to want a 256 graphics video card, because for the engineering, the AutoCAD and everything else, there's bigger demands. So, depending on what the student's going to do.
And a lot of freshmen don't know yet.
Right.
So there they can start out with a very basic system, and an AMD chip is a little less expensive. The quality is still there. I mean, they're just as good as Intel, but you don't have to have all those bells and whistles as though they were an engineering student and going to be running AutoCAD.
And that's usually where you find it. The computers under $1,000 generally have the cheaper AMD processors.
And the other key thing, though, is because a number of companies are cutting back on it to get the prices down. I'm seeing a lot of systems come in, and they've got Windows XP Pro on it, and they only got 256 mega memory.
Or less.
Or less.
Yeah.
Yeah, 128.
You really want 512 meg.
And then shared video memory. That'll really slow your computer down.
Right. Yep. All right, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about Katrina again, this time how it's going to affect your next computer purchase. When we come back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, and Meenik Francesco on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Answering your computer questions for over 15 years. It's Soundbites with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Now, we've talked about Katrina and all the devastation and the damage and how you can help, but you should also know that Katrina will probably have an impact on the price of your next computer. There's a company called, there's a company called Air Products and Chemicals. They've shut down a hydrogen gas complex near New Orleans, limiting the supply of an obscure but important component in semiconductor production. Now, they shut down the plant on August 31st. The plant manufactures hydrogen, which is used to create a specific film on the silicon wafers that they turn into the computer chips. They have another plant in Ontario, Canada, but that one shut down for maintenance. And they've warned that higher oil prices would curb semiconductor growth, but the combination of that and the shutdowns of these plants will definitely be a problem for your next computer system. Obviously, these are extraordinary circumstances. These companies are certainly working to bring the supply back up. But it really looks like your next system is going to be much more expensive than your current system. So maybe you want to buy right now before the prices start jumping.
Yeah, I heard a scary commercial this morning about as high as the gas prices are getting, your heating oil prices are going to be this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Worse this coming winter.
Absolutely. There's no question that... that it's all going up. So maybe if you were looking to buy a new computer and thinking maybe you'd wait a while, maybe you shouldn't.
I have a cool website that I wanted to tell people about.
Okay.
Excuse me, I'm chewing on a chocolate chip cookie.
Sure you finish are. Your cookie.
There is a website that I kind of tripped upon this past week, GasBuddy.com.
There's a bunch
of
different ones.
Different ones that you can go to and find where the cheapest gas is.
In your neighborhood.
In your neighborhood.
Yeah.
They have people, you know, you can log on as a user and say, hey, I found gas for three something or whatever here, and here. Mm-hmm. And it was literally being updated by the
second
minute.
Second by second.
You know, second by second. And it's See, really cool.
I don't want to give the place I buy gas at because then everyone will go there and the price will go up.
Right.
But I have found, because I travel a lot.
I live near you, though, so let's talk.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I've found in my travels, because I travel a lot servicing computers, Irondequoit and Henrietta are significantly cheaper than Greece and Penfield.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sometimes by as much as 30 or 40 cents.
Yeah, it's interesting because they lead you, GasBuddy.com leads you to RochesterGasPrices.com, and it shows you the lowest regular gas prices in the last 60 hours. Now, this is regular, which I assume is actually regular unleaded these days.
You know,
you can't buy leaded gas anymore.
Right.
You know, the funny part about it is the places that have the cheapest gas, you wouldn't expect, without naming names, you wouldn't expect to have the cheapest gas.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it's really weird, but it's nice to know, oh, hey, I forgot that place was there. You may drive by it 150 times, but you're like, yeah.
Well, you know, they did a thing on Discovery, and they even had NASCAR racers on there, because a lot of folks said, well, I can only use mobile gas, or I got to use the name brand gas.
Uh-huh.
You know what? It's all made at the same refinery, folks.
And
it's just which what truck pulls up at that refinery, whether it's a Mobil or a Gulf or a Shell, and heads off.
And the two most expensive gas stations are the two closest to my house.
Yeah.
If you scroll down on that Rochester gas prices, it shows you the highest prices in the area.
Well, you heard about that gas station, again, without naming any names, that was charging an absorbent amount of money on your credit card and holding it for over a week whenever you used your credit card at the gas pump.
Nice.
Oh, really?
You know how some places will put a little mini charge on your card to make sure it's open and things like that? This place was putting a large
amount. Which is usually a dollar.
Usually a dollar. This one, almost $100 on your card, and it would be held for a week.
Oh, and then they'd give it back to you, but by then they've had an interest. They've had your interest.
Fractional interest.
Well, by that, but I mean, think about it. You've got $100 in your account, but you can't touch it because it's locked. I mean, it's just like it's bad.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know what I read about this week, and I don't know. You guys know about cars more than I do. They're saying that if you put acetone in your tank, you get better gas mileage.
It's possible.
Mythbusters did a whole segment on cars and things that are supposed to make your car better, things that are supposed to kill your car, and most of the myths were wrong. Putting salt in your or sugar in your gas tank doesn't do anything because the sugar just sits there.
Right.
It doesn't dissolve in gasoline. It doesn't work. The one thing that does work, which was really amazing, is a raw egg in your radiator will seal a hole until you get to the gas station to get it fixed.
The funny part about it is I chose to buy a new SUV 2 weeks ago, literally a week before this all happened. So I've got this very thirsty SUV with gas prices like this. I spent... well over $50 last time I filled up on my gas tank.
That's only a half a tank.
Yeah. And actually, it's been all over the news this week. Consumer Reports, the current issue, has a big thing on EPA gas ratings on new cars. They're wrong, horribly wrong, and everyone's known that for 20 years. And this guy bought an SUV that's claimed 22, he gets 14.
Yeah.
And
the
EPA said...
Well, people are laughing at the people who bought the electric cars during the last gas crisis. They're just laughing up their sleeves at us.
Well, even those, the one hybrid car was supposed to get 30 and it only gets 18.
Yeah. I'd like to get a hybrid, but you're waiting 2 years now. Listen, we're going to be back in just a few minutes. And when we come back, we'll talk about whether or not we're actually painting ourselves into a corner with the software we use. When we come back on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Now back to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enner.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Interestingly, the World Bank, which of course is the bank of the world, I guess.
You sure about that?
They submitted a report. I just didn't know. I just wanted to make sure everybody knew that. A report submitted to them this week says we should abandon proprietary document formats for more open standards, platform independent, vendor neutral, and usable for multiple implementations. What they're basically saying is that if you have a closed format, this is the sort of thing we're talking about with the DVD RAM.
Right.
If you have a format that only one or two companies know what goes on in the inside, they make a change, you've got old documents, how do you get at them anymore?
It's not only Mac to Windows and Windows to Mac, it's Windows 3 to Windows XP.
Well, that's exactly right.
If you're using Multimate and you get a new XP machine.
I know people who said, "Well, I've got this these documents in an old version of Word. I want to put them back, I want to put them back on my new version of Word. How do I do that?" I don't know. You have to have the old version to read them in, and then save them. For example, every version of Word on Earth will save things in RTF format, rich text format. Rich text is an open standard. Everybody reads it.
And it maintains your formatting. Yeah.
And it maintains all your formatting and stuff. I automatically set up, when I set up Word for anybody, I always set it up to save documents as RTF formatted documents. That way, no matter who they give them to or how old they are, how long they've been sitting around, they'll be readable.
I think that the latest versions of Word will only read back to version 6.
Yep. So if you've got version
Word,
5.
Yeah, Word 5 was a huge program. Everyone used it. In fact, most people skipped version 6.
Yeah.
Because it was so big and bloated.
Well, that's exactly right. And so they're saying that you want open standards. Now, of course, the big open standards are from things like OpenOffice and like that. They have a great open standard, and it's wonderful, and a lot of people are moving to it. The city of Munich is moving to it. Washington, D.C. is talking about going to it, a whole bunch of places. But the point is that they want open standards so that if they've got documents that are 10 years old, which a lot of companies need to save their documents that long, they're guaranteed that they'll be able to open them in something, read them in something, be able to do them in something. Well, it looks like we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everybody to whom we did not get.
And happy birthday again.
Thank you very much. You guys are coming up.
Yeah.
You guys are both coming up. Rob is nowhere near us.
A week from Monday.
Yep.
A week from tomorrow,
What day are you?
19th.
My wife is the 18th, you're the 19th, and I'm the 20th.
Right, exactly.
My stepdaughter's is the 16th, and my sister-in-law's is also the
16th. So is my granddaughter's, the 60th.
Yeah.
It's all about the Virgos this month.
Yep.
We're old, and you're a puppy. You are a puppy.
And unfortunately, I'm older than all of you.
I got to introduce you to my stepdaughter. She's 22.
Yeah, we want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob, Someday I'll Grow Up Linton. I'm Nick Francesco. This is Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Canandaigua National.